The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer and the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to share some rather unusual travel stories, kind of first-person adventures. We begin the journey with grandmother-grandson visit to 63 national parks on adventure of a lifetime. This was originally written by Sidney Page as a special to the Washington Post, and the story appeared in the August 31st, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer. So let's begin with this little adventure. Brad Ryan paused to take in the scene before him. Mountains with perfect peaks, a lush valley, and an endless expanse of untouched Alaskan wilderness. What awed him most, though, was not the Arctic tundra in front of him. It was his grandmother who was hiking through it. "Grandma Joy is a bit of a superhero," said Brad, a D.C.-based veterinarian. "She is not your typical 92-year-old. Their last trip, August, to gates of the Arctic National Park in Alaska was one of many journeys Ryan has embarked on with his paternal grandmother, Joy Ryan, whom he calls Grandma Joy. They are on a shared mission to visit 63 U.S. national parks together. Since they started the effort in 2015, they've made it to 62. "It's beyond anything I could have ever imagined in my life," said Joy, who lives in Duncan Falls, Ohio. Together, they've marveled at the Hawaii Volcanoes National Park and slept beneath the stars at Joshua Tree National Park in California. They did the bridge walk at New River Gorge Park in Lansing, West Virginia, rolled down a dune in Colorado's Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve, and watched brown bears catch salmon at Brook Falls and Katmai National Park in Alaska. "All of it has been magical," said Brad, who moved to D.C. in 2018 and consults with various veterinary hospitals in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. "I've been able to see so much of the country and meet so many people with my grandma by my side." The National Park Project began spontaneously 7 years ago. Brad was stunned when his grandmother, who he knew was deeply fond of nature, told him she'd never seen a mountain in person. At the time, he was beginning his final year of veterinary school at Ohio State University, and Joy had been a widow for 20 years and was living alone in the same tiny town where she grew up. "I wanted to be able to offer an opportunity for my grandmother to see that first mountain," Brad said. So he asked Joy, then 85, if she would be interested in a road trip to Great Smoky Mountains National Park, which straddles the border between North Carolina and Tennessee. Her response, "What time are you picking me up?" In October 2015, they packed Brad's Ford Escape Hybrid and hit the road, driving through the night. "Once they arrived at the park, she not only saw mountains, but she climbed mountains with me," said Brad. "Even when the rain was pouring down, she was smiling." Before their first trip, Brad was struggling with his mental health, he said, and his grandmother taught him to be resilient. "I was trying to do something to help her, and she ended up saving me in the process," he said. "From there, we just realized there was more that we wanted to see and do together." His grandmother agreed. "Every time he wants to do something, I'll go," Joy said. "I've seen things that people have never seen in their whole life. It's just been amazing." Growing up, Brad described his relationship with his grandmother as idyllic. "We were very close throughout my childhood," he recalled, saying he has vivid memories of catching frogs with her at the neighborhood park in Duncan Falls. "My grandma was one who was very adamant about me being out in nature, and I think my love of animals in part came from the exposure that I got to nature from her," Brad said. But their bond fractured when Brad was in college amid his parents' divorce. There was a 10-year period where he and his grandmother didn't speak. "Over time, I eventually reached out to her, and we had to really start our relationship from scratch," Brad said. Rebuilding their bond, he said, was accelerated as they began spending countless hours on the open road, side by side. They've driven nearly 50,000 miles. What would be a typical grandson-grandparent relationship turned into the closest friendship I could ever imagine having with somebody, Brad said. I don't think there's any stone we've left unturned in terms of sharing our life stories. I wouldn't trade him for anybody, echoed his grandmother. He's my best friend, that's for sure. After the first trip, which Brad paid for, he started a GoFundMe page as he knew they couldn't afford to visit all 63 national parks on their list. They raised nearly $3,000 in one fundraising round and close to $9,000 in another. The funds paid for a month-long road trip in the summer of 2017, during which they saw 21 national parks. We were being very conservative with our money and trying to see as much as we could, said Brad, who also contributed some of his own savings. In June 2018, they visited Cuyahoga Nash Valley National Park in Ohio, and later that summer, they did a 9-day road trip to see several parks, including Shenandoah National Park in Virginia and Biscayne National Park in Florida. In 2019, Brad began chronicling their journey on social media to share with family and friends. Once their story started appearing in local news, various companies and travel agencies began reaching out with offers to sponsor their trips, Brad said. Plus, we've had a lot of private citizens that made donations, too, he added, explaining that numerous strangers also offered to host them at their homes. This whole thing has been fueled by generosity. Joy believes their story resonates with strangers because it showcases what's possible. I think we just kind of wake people up, she said. In September 2019, the pair embarked on a 45-day road trip, visiting 20 national parks across 14 states. They took longer trips, such as that one, while Brad was between jobs, and for shorter excursions, he used vacation days. On each trip, Joy, who worked at her local grocery store until she was in her early 80s, embraced challenges such as climbing mountains, sleeping in tents, and whitewater rafting. I'm always willing to try something different, said Joy, a mother of three children and a grandmother of four. With Brad by her side, she said she feels safe. He's very considerate. He always holds my arm, Joy said. He is the sweetest boy. He just makes my heart sing. I wish more grandmas had grandsons like him. Although Brad has had to modify some of their adventures to suit his grandmother's needs and abilities, there are lessons to be learned by slowing down, too, he said. 99% of the time, when I asked if she wants to do something, she says, we'll give it a whirl. That's because I'll never think about how old I am. I just do it, Joy said. In between trips, we try to see other noteworthy places, said Brad, who took his grandmother to D.C. in March to see the cherry blossoms. Within the next year, they're planning to make it to the last national park on their list, the National Park of American Samoa. The final stop, they both said, will be bittersweet. It'll be a glad day and a sad day, Joy said. We'll be start going to state parks then. Indeed, Brad plans to continue showing his grandmother over the country and perhaps even the world. Doing so, he said, he has been the most rewarding thing he has ever done. As a grandson, watching her life story unfold completely differently than it otherwise would have, it gives me peace, Brad said. She finally got to start living the life of adventure she had always been waiting for and deserved. What a great story. Well, our next story takes place in Paris, and it's written by Anna Hartley. Headlined, Paris by Sidecar, a unique way to experience the City of Lights. This appeared in the August 19, 2022 issue of the Washington Post. And there's an image that accompanied this story, and it had a caption. The writer and her guide crossed the Bar Hakim Bridge in Paris on a cloudy day via Royal Enfield motorcycle and Watsonian sidecar. That'll give you an idea of what we're in for. Well, as we idle at a quiet intersection, waiting for the light to change, a man crossing the street stops in his tracks, pulls his headphones down, and approaches us with a look of childish delight. It's impossible to exchange more than a few words, but that does not seem to bother him, nor the many other Parisians who suddenly drop their usual cool reserve to smile and chat as we ride through the city. My guide, Simon Burke, is used to it. Cruising in a beautiful sidecar does that to people. I'm sitting low in a Watsonian basket, bolted securely to the side of Simon's burnished red Royal Enfield Interceptor 650 motorcycle. We're zigzagging through the streets beside the Seine River, and despite the fact that I've lived in Paris for the best part of a decade, I feel as if I'm seeing it all anew. After years of on-and-off lockdowns, tourism has returned to Paris. And looking at the volume of visitors now, you would scarcely believe they were ever gone. The city is buzzing, and as we cruise, I think of trilling flute solo and persistent beat of the 1968 hit song Il Essing Huez, Paris Seville. It's 5 a.m., Paris is waking up, by singer Jacques Dujonc. The city seems to be indeed waking up after a long slumber, yet the pandemic hit the industry here just as hard as anywhere else. Simon would not be sitting on the bike beside me if it were not for COVID. The difficulties faced by the large tourism company he had worked within for years gave him the boost he needed to strike out on his own. And he decided to combine his longtime passion for motorcycles into Tango Tours, a private business that would be as agile and independent as his beloved bikes. And I might add, it's an unusual spelling of Tango, T-X-A-N-G-O. And the X is kind of silent, Zango, you could say, but Tango is what they call it. The engine roars to life, and we're now crossing the Bir Hakeim Bridge with the Eiffel Tower over our right shoulders. It's an unusually wet and stormy day, but enough light comes through between dark clouds to give the river a brilliant shine. I laugh giddily as we zoom up the street, the wind tossing loose strands of hair around my helmet. Paris is coming at me thick and fast, and without the barrier of a full windshield nor the responsibility of being the driver, I can really take it all in. And I'm never more grateful that I'm not driving than when I see what lies before us, the Arc de Triomphe, and around it the notorious Etoile roundabout, the 12 large avenues all empty into this one spot, yet it has no lanes, and read this quite carefully, right of way is given to vehicles entering rather than those already in the roundabout. Think about that one for a minute with what we do here in this country. Well, continuing, rather than stopping at the edge of the swirling vortex, we dive right in, directly into the path of multiple cars and buses. The temptation to clutch the sides and close my eyes is strong, but magically, order prevails, and the traffic moves to absorb us. We spin around the towering arc under the giant French flag billows in the wind, and the Avenue des Champs-Élysées swoops way behind us toward the Paris's other great traffic jumble, Place de Concorde, and beyond it, the Tuileries Gardens and Louvre Museum. But none of those will be our next stop. On this aptly named Paris Monuments Tour, we're hitting all the sights, but unlike those on the tour bus, we're nimble and free, taking as many back roads as possible. Time and again, usually reticent Parisians pop their heads out of car windows or stop in the street to admire the rig. In 2022, a sidecar is charming, old-fashioned, and unusual. Yet they were once a common sight. The first sidecar was invented by a Frenchman who was designed to be attached to a bicycle. They were once part of a common family vehicle before the advent of affordable family cars. Nowadays, they're just for enthusiasts like Simon, and indeed my granddad. When he immigrated from England to Australia, he brought his passion for vintage English cars and bikes with him. He and his wife were keen sidecar rallyists and spent their weekends zooming across the outback, Nana in the basket with her helmet and gargles, maps of Australia spread on her lap in the era before GPS. The motorcycle gene has so far not manifested in me, but there is no denying the thrill of being on a bike. I'm jolted back to reality as soon as we zoom over the French capital's famous cobblestone streets. Our ride is like a who's who of Paris sights: Arc de Triomphe, Palais Garnier, the Louvre, Pont Neuf. And although we cannot quite see it from here, it's impossible not to think of Paris' other great lady, the Notre Dame Cathedral. In April 2019, columns of thick black smoke billowed high into the sky when a fire of unknown origin set the ancient cathedral alight, destroying the spire, most of the roof, and some of the upper walls, and taking with it a little bit of the soul of Paris. The smoke has long since cleared, but when you pass nearby, it looks strange and hollow, yet again under construction, almost 900 years after the first stone was laid. Pont Neuf is its unusual, glorious self, its stones worn with centuries of weather and foot traffic, and to the east, groups of tourists board boats on the tip of the Île de Cité, ready to cross and cruise up and down the Seine River. The river is not an official stop on this tour, but it's the ever-present icon that ties the city together. Paris is one of the busiest ports in France, but the individual zones are slowly being squeezed out as the banks of the famous river are converted into pedestrianized public places. A wealth of gardens, outdoor gyms, bars, and cafes have turned the river into a 24-hour attraction. No wonder that for the 2024 Paris Olympics, the organizing committee is eschewing the usual stadium or concert hall and will host the opening ceremonies on the river. We continue back on the left bank now, skirting the river past the Musée d'Orsay and the Musée de Légion d'Honneur, then over the Pont de la Concorde, an unbeautiful bridge that holds great historical significance, connecting the National Assembly on one side and the Place la Concorde on the other. A once blood-soaked from guillotine bodies during the Revolution on the other, the bridge is built from stones salvaged from the Bastille prison. For now, the Place de la Concorde's centerpiece, a magnificent ancient Egyptian obelisk, is obscured, hidden behind scaffolding as it undergoes restoration. Yet more evidence that, since the stillness of the coronavirus, Paris is once again moving and shaking. We continue back on the left bank now, skirting the river past the Musée d'Orsay, and then, of course, other attractions. The sky is mostly cleared, and rays of sunshine dance on the golden statues of the Beaux-Arts marvel Pont Alexandre III as we cruise underneath them. In a city of epic views, this is still hard to beat. Before us, the great dome of the chapel of the Hôtel National des Invalides, better known as the final resting place of Napoleon Bonaparte, shines brightly, winking in the sunlight as we drive by. We're weaving through the beautiful, quiet streets of the 7th Arrondissement when Simon makes a few quick swerves and flies the basket, sending me, the basket, and my surprised laughter into the air. In a pretty place as this, it's easy to be silly. Finally, the Grand Dame. Drops of rain slowly drip from the leaves of the plane trees at the Champ de Mars and from the surprisingly delicate ironwork on the Eiffel Tower. There she stands, at once imposing and fine, gently resting on the soaked ground and reaching high into the sky, where she enjoys an expansive view uncluttered by skyscrapers and cranes. The morning weather had slowed the usual crowds, but now they have reemerged, shaking rain from their umbrellas and folding them away, treading a jaunty beat around the City of Lights, Paris, Seville. By the way, Anna Hartley is based in Paris, and she has a website, AnnaHartleyWrites.com. That's AnnaHartleyWrites.com if you want to check it out. And she has a Twitter account, too, @its_AnnaHartley. That's @its_AnnaHartley. And she says if you want to go use Tango Tours, again, that's TXANGO in Paris, you can check them out online at TXANGO, TangoTours.com. The company offers group motorcycle sidecar tours in Paris and Versailles. It's not a passive experience. One guest rides in the basket, another on the back of the bike, a guide drives. The two-hour Paris Monuments Tour zips through some of the city's most famous sites, including the Eiffel Tower and Louvre. Up to four guests can take in the tour with a second sidecar. The Paris Tour is available daily except Monday, and tours are about $130 for one guest, half off for the second guest. So there you go, some travel planning to go to Paris, right? Well, Adriana Perez of the Chicago Tribune is the writer of our next story, headlined Paddleboarder with Disability on a Quest to Traverse All Great Lakes. This one appeared in the August 19, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer, Dateline Chicago. A small dot on the horizon grew larger as a group of 10 paddleboarders prepared to join it. Some of them whistled, hooted, and yelled words of encouragement, waving their paddles in the air. And so Michael Shorman reached the shore, equipped with a paddle and a bright blue board. At approximately 8:30 a.m. on July 27th, a 39-year-old Shorman landed on North Avenue Beach after a 27-hour journey on paddleboard across Lake Michigan that started the day before at 5:40 a.m. According to his team, Shorman is on the way to being the first athlete with a disability to cross the Great Lakes. He wiped away tears as his feet touched the sand. He had beaten his expectations to travel the 44.1 miles between Union Pier, Michigan and Chicago in 30 hours. "This is the emotional part," Shoreman's manager, Leanna Newman, said. She picked up the pace to give the paddleboarder a hug. Shoreman has had plenty of these emotional moments over the summer. On July 5th, he crossed Lake Superior in 8 hours, and after crossing Lake Huron in 28 hours on June 13th, and Lake Erie in 7 hours on May 19th. "I really feel tired, but I'm really happy to be here," Shoreman told the Tribune. "Chicago is one of my favorite cities in the world. It's my favorite American city. And so to be able to arrive here in front of this beautiful skyline and all these amazing paddleboarders, well, it's just amazing." In 2018, Shoreman suddenly developed Ramsey Hunt syndrome, a shingles variant and neurological condition. The disease attacked his ear, paralyzed and collapsed the right side of his face, and gave him mobility, vision, speech, taste, and hearing problems. He also has vertigo, which makes paddleboarding particularly difficult. "So I went from being very athletic to not being able to walk, and I spent a year learning how to retrain my brain how to walk properly," Shoreman said. "And the doctor said I'd never paddleboard again, and I had a mental health breakdown. And on the other side of learning how to walk and getting back on the paddleboard, I just wanted to work with mental health organizations that support youth and young people and help support them. So this is to raise money to put mental health programs in schools for young people." Shoreman has been involved with many mental health advocacy organizations, such as Kenneth Cole's The Mental Health Coalition, the Trevor Project, and the Tyler Clemente Foundation, and Canada's youth mental health organization, JAC.org. Newman has been friends with Shoreman for about 7 years. Ever since she took a class with him back on the Toronto waterfront, where he was a paddleboard instructor. "I've been a mortician, a funeral director for 22 years, so I'm off with PTSD. I've been off for 2 years," she said, "and he's doing this for mental health, so it's dear to my heart. During the crossings, Shoreman cramps, sits down, stands up, laughs, cries. But one thing he can't do is stop paddling for too long, otherwise the board drifts away on the water. "Last night was very difficult," he said. "It was scary at times. Yet every time the sun comes out, Shoreman is re-energized." Newman says she has never met someone with such raw determination. "I don't know where he gets it from. It's really something to witness," she said. "And he just pulls it from within and remembers why he's doing this and then gets it done." Closer to the city, paddleboarders from the group Chicago Stand Up Paddleboarding joined Shoreman to give him one last push. "You guys are the best," Mike told them once they were all ashore. "We're just the support. You are the best," an accompanying paddleboard answered. A support team of five accompanied Shoreman by boat during his last crossing, including two videographers, two captains, and Newman. They kept his spirits up, assist with logistics such as feeding him a carbohydrate shake every 30 minutes, and having him drink electrolytes every hour. The next and last Great Lake that Shoreman will attempt to cross is Lake Ontario. He tried to cross it from Rochester to Toronto in summer of 2021, but was unsuccessful. He is expected to face that challenge again in mid-August. Shoreman said his team says they love these trips and always ask him where the next adventure will take them. "I joke around, well, maybe we could do the Arctic next," he said in between chuckles. "No, I have interest, of course, but you know this is purpose-driven." He talked about how many people suffer mental health problems such as anxiety, stress, and depression. "We don't talk about it, and a lot of people suffer, and they shouldn't. This is to raise awareness and to hopefully raise a lot of money to save young people's lives," he said. Whether Shoreman will attempt crossing other large bodies of water in the future remains to be seen, but regardless of what happens next, Newman is convinced of one thing. "It won't be the end of what you hear about Mike," Newman said. "He'll keep being out there, making a difference." Well, once again, we're going to turn back to Sidney Page, who we heard earlier about an article they wrote, and it's talking about a frequent bus rider named James Warren. Now, her story, first written as a special to the Washington Post, appeared in the August 19, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer, headlined, "He saw a woman sitting in the dirt at a bus stop, so he began making benches," and we're going to read an excerpt from this story. James Warren rides the public bus a lot in his hometown of Denver. Ever since he went car-free in 2017, he uses buses to get around if he can't get to his destination on foot or bike. Many of the bus stops, he began to notice, lack seating for riders as they wait. Then in January, Warren spotted a woman waiting for a bus along a busy road. There was no seating at the stop and no sidewalk, so she sat on the dirt. For people who have to sit in the dirt while they're waiting for a bus is just undignified, said Warren, 28, who works as a consultant for the Colorado Workforce Development Council. He wanted to do something about it, so he decided to build a bench. I just took some scrap wood and went to town, Warren said, adding that he hoped his woman and others seeking a seat would not need to rest in the dirt again. He then realized that one bench was far from enough. There are more than 9,000 regional transportation district, that's RTD, bus stops in the Denver metro area, many of them without seating or shelter. Warren decided to contribute what he could. Perhaps he thought his homemade bench initiative might get the attention of transit or city officials who would see the need for better bus stops. I can change the small amount that I have control over, Warren said. Since building his first bench in January, he has crafted 7 more and placed them at bus stops around Denver, each made from scrap wood he finds in construction dumpsters. As far as design goes, I mostly just wing it, Warren said. The benches take about 3 hours to build, and Warren inscribes, "Be kind," on each one, either using a stencil or a wood-burning tool. He keeps an eye out for bus stops around the city that seem barren. He chats with riders at stops to gauge demand. Recently at one bus stop, I was talking to someone who said it's difficult to stand for long periods of time, Warren said. I knew where the next bench was going. For Warren, that's what is most rewarding about his project is knowing his benches are going to be put to use. I get a little giddy when I see someone using a bench, he said. They're so thankful. They tell me how annoying it is to wait or how painful it is to wait. I met some ladies the other day who were talking about how they use the benches every single day, Warren added. It fills me up. It's air in my tires. Although some of the benches have been vandalized or stolen, Warren said it doesn't dampen his desire to make them. If people destroy or take away things that I'm putting out there, it's not going to stop me, he said. I'll keep doing it. Every bench they steal, I'm going to put out 2 more. Warren said people have hopped on his bench-making bandwagon, which has motivated him to build more. I've had a lot of people reach out to me on Twitter and Reddit, he said. Some people have wanted to come and help me. Alex Hogan, age 32, heard what Warren was doing, and he was eager to join the effort, and they spent an afternoon together building the bench. He showed me how he does it. It's a pretty simple design, but it does seem to work well, Hogan said. It's been great just to see different people get involved and having something to offer the community. This guy has motivation, Hogan said of Warren. Not just a normal amount, huge amounts of motivation. I've never seen anyone quite as motivated as James is to do these things. Hopefully it rubs off on me. There you go. How about that? Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Armchair Traveling. We certainly hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler, available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That, again, is ncreadingservice, all one word, .org. And if you have any comments or questions, you can call 919-832-5138. Our number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.